The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Playing us in on this special edition is Nate Herrar, who goes by the name Dalton. I don't really know why, unless he's wanted in five states as Nate Herrar. It doesn't make any sense to me.
It's from the movie Roadhouse.
Oh, is that what it is?
He's a big fan of the original with Patrick Swayze.
The song is called Second Life. We like him. I'm Tony Kornheiser. We're live right now at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest. It's a special edition. Katie Ledecky is here, her family is here, and we're going to chat for a while. We're not going to do the normal stuff that we do. We're not going to do email. We're not going to do news. I'm not going to talk about the fight. I should talk about the fight, but the fight was way too late for me. I didn't stay up for it. Did you guys stay up for the fight? No, nobody here stayed up for the fight. So I wouldn't say anything intelligent. I'm not going to talk about the Nats. I'm going to do a read first. We're going to do the Casper read first, all right?
That's right.
Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep service was developed in-house. It has a sleek design. It's delivered in a small, how-do-they-do-that size box. In addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. The mattress industry has forced consumers into paying notoriously high markups. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. An in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combined supportive memory foams for a sleep service that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. And that's all the things that they write. But if you were the parent, for example, of a college-age student.
That's right.
And if that college-age student was 3,000 miles away, and you wanted to make sure that that college-age student had a good bed, you would order a Casper mattress.
Absolutely.
And have it sent to that college-age student, who would open up this box and suddenly, voila,
right,
the Casper mattress blows up.
Yes.
It blows up. It's wonderful. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery, free returns with a 100-night home trial. It's like a semester. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up. They'll refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. And the Casper mattress has over 30,000 global reviews. Like Joseph G, not Kenny G, but Joseph G from Colorado said, as a former athlete, sleep and comfort is key to performance, and Casper does that now for my life and my wife. So it's good to get the lady into that one, right? I mean, life and my wife, that's very good. All right, it's available in the United States, Canada. It's available in the United Kingdom. You can order online. It's delivered to your door in a compact box. There's free shipping and free returns. Don't sit out on the sideline. Try the Casper for 100 nights in your own home. And there's a special offer to listeners of this particular high-quality podcast. You can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/Tony and using Tony. Terms and conditions apply. And that's how we started the Greg Garcia. We sold some stuff. Now we start the real show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. We've got the Ledecky family. We've got David Ledecky. We've got Mary Jen Ledecky. We've got Michael Ledecky, who we met at the fabulous event where his sister Katie, where Katie's here too, was inducted into the Washington Sports Hall of Fame. But you were swimming.
Yeah, I was out in California.
Getting ready
for World Championship Trials.
So your brother got the chance to
walk
this is
out
great,
on this field.
To walk out. What was that? I loved it. How did you feel walking out on the Nats field?
Absolutely glorious, Tony, and it made it all the better that I was standing right next to you, and I think Tom McMillan was on the other side.
Yeah, so. Tom McMillan, that's yeah. right, because you, yeah, KLM, that's right, you would
that's
be right.
right
in the middle. Tom McMillan, 6'11".
Yeah, he absolutely dwarfed me. It was,
dwarfs everybody, 6'11".
I know that you were afraid to go out on the field because you thought you might be the shortest guy on the field. I ended up getting that designation. I was able to make you look good, so you owe
and I appreciate
me that one. Yeah.
Well, I got you Johnny O shirt.
That's
so,
right,
you know,
yeah.
So I mean, you're
trade.
We're going to, the promo, oh, wait, let me just say that right now, because the promo code is out. The Tony K promo code is back online for Johnny O. So now you can buy things for Labor Day. You can buy things for back to school. You can get 25% off by using the Tony K promo code on Johnny O products. So by the way, Johnny O, John O'Donnell, brother of Chris O'Donnell,
that's
John
right.
O'Donnell, who runs the company, in a couple of weeks is going to be in town, and Michael and I are going to see him. Michael, we're going to play golf. Michael, Liz, and Bootsy are here.
That's right, Bootsy.
Bootsy
yes.
making his debut public appearance thankfully, at the moment, rocked himself to sleep. And later, if he creates ambient noise, they're out of here. So, okay. So let me get to this, because I've tried very hard to make sure that Katie was comfortable by just vamping around. Here's where we're going to start, because I did talk to your mom at this particular event when I said it would be great if Katie would do a podcast. And Mary Jane, you said you were a college swimmer, right?
Yes.
So where did you go to school, and what did you swim?
I swam the freestyle, and I swam at the University of New Mexico. This was back in the mid-70s, and I was a walk-on. There weren't a lot of women's swim teams at the time in college, but I was a beneficiary. Title IX was passed right around that time, and I was at the University of New Mexico, and UNM.
Did you wait? Did, Title IX? Did you get a free ride? Did you get a full ride?
Well, I did pretty well with it. UNM at the time had a very good men's basketball team.
Sure.
And so they
the
were
Lobos.
Right. And so they were scurrying to make sure that the women's athletic budgets were equalized with the men's. And so as a walk-on, I did get a scholarship and books and room and board and
that?
So forth. So that was great. But I look back on that now and really appreciate that, and even more so knowing how many or seeing how many women now are participating in sports, especially in the swimming pool.
So you have two kids. You have Michael,
right,
who is how old at the time you go to the pool, and Katie, who is how old when you go to the pool?
Okay. Michael was 9. And Katie was 6, and we had just joined the Palisades Pool Association over on Seven Locks Road in Bethesda, Cabin John, and it was a little ways from our house, but I was very excited because I felt like I had a great pool to swim in and swim laps. And
So you were still swimming?
I was just recreationally, wanting to swim laps, and I wanted to make sure that both Michael and Katie were safe in the water, because I really enjoyed going to the swimming pool and just enjoyed the sport.
See,
I wasn't
I'm a non-swimmer.
But
I stand. I find the part in the pool that's about 4 feet, and I stand, and I can do the modified American dog paddle to the side. That's all I can do, and then I pull myself up.
Right.
I am a complete non-swimmer. So you wanted them to be swimmers.
Right, right. I wanted them to be safe in the water. I wasn't really thinking of a swimming team at the time, but I was really happy that we had a pool to go to in the heat of Washington, that we'd have a pool to go to, and it was just it's a great swimming pool and association. So I get there the first day, the pool opens, Michael's 9, Katie's 6, they just finished, I guess Katie finished her year at kindergarten, and Michael had just finished
third grade.
So we get to the pool, and we get in, and I start swimming around a little bit, getting them in the pool, and I realize that they don't know anybody at this pool, because it was a little bit of a ways from our home, and thinking, oh gosh, you know, I really want them to meet some kids so that when we come to the pool they can play and it'll just be so much more fun for them. And then I saw the sign that they had a swim team there, and I thought, oh, this will be just perfect, because I had so many fond memories of myself swimming.
So you signed them up?
I signed them up for
the team. Did you get a vote, Michael? Did you get a vote as to whether you'd be signed up?
I think we just kind of went along with it. You know, Mom had kind of fostered our love for the water even earlier, but as far as swimming laps or doing anything seriously with swimming, we hadn't done anything seriously with the team at that point, but we were excited to meet some new kids and have fun with it.
And Katie, you're 6 at that point. Do you like the water at that point?
I love the water. I think from the first day I was in the pool, but when I was 6, I couldn't get across the pool without grabbing onto the lane line. So my goal that first year of summer league swimming was to complete a 25-meter freestyle in a meet without stopping. And by the end of the year, I made it.
Did you, Mary Jen, did you notice anything about either of them early in the water, or were they just kids in the water?
They were just kids in the water. Both Dave and I wanted them to feel safe in the water and to be able to go to the pool and enjoy it. We didn't really have any goal in mind with signing them up for the swim team other than to just have fun during the summer and to have a pool to go to. So when I said, do you both want to join the swim team? And they said, oh, yeah, sure. And I think in about a week they had 100 new friends at the pool.
So that was a good way to meet people.
It was a great way. It was a great way. Yeah.
So were you good?
I was okay. I barely scratched onto the A-team that first week. I remember that somebody was out on vacation or sick, so I got like the last lane for my first A-meet, which is kind of there's an A-meet and a B-meet. The A-meets are Saturday mornings. They were scored out, but none of it's super competitive or intense, but...
But it was a big deal.
I was excited, and I dropped time. I got really into it, you know, learned how to do a flip turn, went to practice every day. Katie was on the far lane practicing herself, trying to just make it across the pool, but she was so determined. But you could tell early on, though, that Katie had probably a better feel for the water than I did.
Okay.
But she was only in a B meet the whole first summer. Yeah, she never made the A meet.
So did you have any sense you were any good at it?
No, not at all. We joined a year-round swim team the fall after that first summer of summer league swimming, and it was kind of at that point where we started to get a little better, and that next year we were probably two of the better swimmers on the team, or were consistently going to the A meets at least.
And so then you're 8 at that point.
Well, I was 7 that next year, and then 8, and I think I you know, broke my first summer league record when I was 8, and kind of was at the upper end of the league when I was 8, but I still did other sports up until 11 or 12.
One of the obvious questions for anybody would be, when did you notice you were good? Like, when did you say to yourself, oh, well, I'm pretty good at this? I had no idea, but I'm pretty good.
I don't know if I ever really sat and thought of that. I just loved the sport so much. And by the time I was 12, 13, I guess 11, 12, around that age, I was still playing basketball and soccer. But I always realized that I would pick swim practice over basketball practice if the two conflicted. And then I broke my arm playing basketball in fourth grade in gym class. Was always really competitive in gym class and fell and broke my arm. And I think around that time, I kind of started to realize that I wanted to commit to swimming and really give that 100% of my effort.
So we'll ask the dad now. We'll ask Dave. Like, you're watching this from afar. When did you look at your daughter and say, ooh, she's pretty good at this?
I think there was a meet that was one of the first swim meets that Mary Jen and I actually did not attend. Katie, I don't know why we didn't attend. There must have been a death in the family because we basically went to every swim meet. But there was a meet up in
sectionals
up in Buffalo. And
so you're already traveling. I mean, you're already good enough.
Well, when I was 13, I think. 13 or... I think I was 13 that year.
It might have been one of your first sectional meets, and we were just watching the results come in, and she was beating swimmers who were 16, 17, 18 years old, and then we began to think, oh, maybe she's got something here. But she was good. She was good early on in the summer league, and got a lot of attention for that. And you know, but you never think your daughter's going to become an Olympian. I mean, I think I'm like the last guy in the world who would have ever thought he would have a daughter who would make the Olympic team.
So this is to me a very interesting thing, because I don't think it's unfair to use the word prodigy. And you were a competitive swimmer in college. When did you, Mary Jen, look at your daughter and say, wow, she's actually really good and could be better than really good?
Oh, gosh. I probably would echo what Dave said about the sectional meet being one that was a real indicator to me that, wow, she really is... she's got something there, because she was winning every event she was in. It wasn't just freestyle. I think it was butterfly. It was individual medley. And prior to that, and she was 13 at that point. And earlier than that, it would be hard for me to pinpoint anything. She was very good in the very competitive Montgomery County Swim League, which is huge in our area, and we really look at that as such a great start for so many good swimmers in this area. But it's a developmental league, and So prior to that sectional meet, I would say we knew she was very, very competitive. A lot of times people will ask me, well, when did you know she would be an Olympian? And I have to be very, very honest. She made the Olympic team at age 15. So go back to the sectional meet when she was 13. 2 years later, she made the Olympic team. And I honestly tell people I knew she was going to be an Olympian when she made the Olympic team, because...
That's what I would think, because I would agree with you, Dave, that how do you ever think, well, my child is going to make the Olympic team?
Right.
The Olympic team seems so far away and so elite that you would come up with reasons of saying, well, she can't do that. You can't, right?
Well, particularly with a father who has no discernible ability.
Yeah.
makes it kind of hard.
Yeah, so, and I remember when you used the word prodigy back in back at Nats Park, Tony, and Dad and I actually talked a bit about it afterwards. And, you know, I mean, if it really comes down to it, I don't think Katie is your traditional prodigy, or, you know, when you think of somebody like a Tiger Woods or somebody like that who was just born to golf. I mean, up until 13 or 14 years of age, there are probably 5 or 10 kids in the country who were better than Katie. So I think that, you know, you look at Katie's athletic ability too. She has that natural feel for the water. She's got height genes that I don't have. But aside from that, I think that the hard work that she's put in as she's gotten older, and obviously when you're 15 and winning an Olympic gold medal, you're still a prodigy by most definitions.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would look at it,
but
somebody sits down plays the piano. And
yeah,
you're six, and you go, my God, they have an unbelievable skill.
I wouldn't put Katie in that category.
But
no,
you don't get better if you don't practice.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't. I mean, there are lots of people who do that, and then as you get higher and higher on the ladder, that sort of confirms. I guess prodigy is a word that people shy away from. But do you, Katie? Did you ever think of yourself in that way as you were getting better and better and better? Like you told us earlier that your first goal was just to get across the pool.
Yeah. I was just like any of the other swimmers that had pretty similar goals at that same age. I think maybe by the time I was 10, 11, 12, as I was saying, when I started realizing I really wanted to commit to swimming, I think then I kind of realized that I was different from other people in my commitment level and my desire to get to practice on time and, you know, go to every practice available and really, you know, set those goals. But I, you know, at that point, I was still doing this, you know, the same number of practices as everyone else. I was just going with kind of an attitude of, you know, I want to do the very best that I can in this.
But as you do that, is there an age? I mean, you make the Olympic team at 15. That's unbelievable. Although swimmers, you know, the history of swimmers.
Yeah, I'm not
is
the first 15-year-old.
Right, they've 13, 14, 15, and that's happened before.
Mm-hmm.
But is when do you say to yourself, even if you don't say it out loud, I'm going to try and make the Olympics. I'm going to win gold medals. I'm going to try and make the Olympics.
I said it one time before I made the Olympic team, and that was, I think, September of 2011, so the year before I made the Olympic team. And I was sitting down with my coach, Yuri Sugiyama, at lunch. We were just having a goal meeting and discussing the year and the plan and what meets I was going to be going to. And we started talking about Olympic trials, and he said, Katie, what would be the ultimate goal at Olympic trials? And I didn't know what to say. I was like, I kind of stuttered, and I'll never forget this. I mean, this is exactly how he said. He just said, Katie, come on, what would be the ultimate goal at Olympic trials? And I said, make the Olympic team. And he's like, all right, say it again. I said, make the Olympic team. And he said, okay, that's the goal. And it's just between us two. I think I only told really maybe my mom, my dad, my brother, but they probably thought I was crazy at that point. And just kind of set to work and started dropping time and kind of getting serious and noticing that I was kind of creeping up the ladder of the rankings for USA Swimming in my events. And I think before Olympic trials, I was seated second or third in a few events. So I knew I had a chance.
So this is now a mom and a dad question. Do you ever worry this is going to go badly? Yes, she's very good here, and yes, her times are very good, but do you worry, oh, if we devote everything to this and it doesn't work out, have we done the wrong thing?
I don't I don't think we ever felt that. I think what we did is we followed the schedule. We supported her. She was very, obviously very enthusiastic in the sport. She very much enjoyed swimming even with her high school team that year leading up to the Olympic trials. But she also enjoyed going to some of the USA swimming meets that year. And was doing very, very well. We were just supporting her effort. We weren't necessarily shooting for that Olympic team or expecting that, I guess.
I think I'll add, I mean, you said like putting everything into it. I think the thing that kind of has always helped me is it hasn't always been about swimming. School has always been really important to me. As my mom said, I swam with my high school team, and my coach, Bob Walker, was really supportive of my USA swimming success and wanted me to do my very best there. And but also, I just love being with my teammates in high school. And I was just a freshman in high school at a new high school, Stone Ridge School of the Sacred Heart, and was just getting to know all these people and wanted to meet as many friends as I could then. So kind of that year leading up to my first Olympics, it was... doing other things as well. It wasn't
so just, you don't ever feel you yeah you don't feel you were just single tracked and you don't feel like
no
yeah because sometimes you see I the question then becomes burnout for a lot of kids. They start on travel teams and they devote themselves wholly and completely to this one thing, and some of them say at 16 or 17 I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm
I mean, it's certainly a...
How did you guard against that?
Yeah. I mean, it is a crazy schedule of waking up at 4 in the morning, you know...
Not when you get old.
3 days
four
a week.
4 is good. I'm yeah. up at 4.
No, I mean when through high school, I was waking up at 4 in the morning, you know, 3 times a week, and then I would swim, go to school, go to another swim practice, get home at 6 or 6:30, do my homework, go to bed, repeat it the next day. And so it was a big commitment, but having those other things, having school in the middle of the day, having teammates that I was really good friends with, made it so much fun. It still makes it fun like that.
So you're the big brother, Michael. You're the big brother in this. And you watch this of your sister, and you watch her at an extraordinarily young age do this thing extraordinarily well. How does that work for you?
Well, it was interesting from my perspective because I was putting almost as many hours into the pool, probably less around 2012. But yeah, I grew up swimming next to her, swimming laps with her. We still sometimes get in and splash around a little bit. But having that perspective was really special, and watching her grow up through the sport and love it so much, and to understand, you know, the pain and the sacrifice that goes through you know, just the day to day grind of a practice, it makes it really special for me.
Did you feel the need ever to establish a separate identity? I mean, because everybody said, well, you're her brother. I mean,
That's hard to say. I mean, I've definitely embraced it over the last 5-6 years, almost to maybe a fault, but I think we both had, you know, different things going on, and you know, it was always fun swimming with her. Sometimes it would get a little competitive to the point where...
Oh, can you beat
I'd
her?
What?
Can you beat her?
Not now. Maybe in a 50 kick, and if Katie's not feeling well, but she could, like, she'd be fine, yeah. But
what was the...
It was...
Yeah, well, how did...
So I mean, she first beat me when she was maybe 13 years old. I was, like, 16, and at least in 100-meter freestyle, she was beating me in the distance stuff. I had given that up you know, by the time I was 14 or so, because Katie was starting to, or 15 or 16, because she was blowing by me in the distance events. But I still had some sprinting strength, and I'd carry that through high school. But I eventually, well, pretty quickly accepted it once I realized that she was beating not just me, but basically everybody on my guy's high school team in at least some event. So I just totally embraced it, and I was... You know, I'd be talking to my friends at lunch when I was a senior in high school, bragging about Katie being
the good thing,
you know, just
is
top
I could
five
some
in the
of
country.
Those guys too.
Exactly,
oh, you
yeah.
beat them all, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, when my son first beat me in golf, which is not hard because I'm no good, I was very happy. But I also realized that was it. I would not only would I never beat him, I would never get close to him again. And I wondered, what, Katie, when you beat your brother for the first time, do you remember it at all?
No, I don't remember it.
It's probably too young. I mean, it depends.
I couldn't pinpoint the day or the
It's not like a singular game like golf where it's, you know, yeah, you've got several different events, you know, different lanes. You can have some kind of comparison with times, but yeah, I don't know. I guess it depends on when she's beating you at your own game, whether that's, you know, the 50 or the 100 meter freestyle where you think you'd have a pretty discreet advantage. I guess that's when I started to realize that she's got something really, really special here, and I've got to just get on that train and embrace it.
I would think that you would know even more than your mom and dad. If you're in the pool with her and you're swimming, you would know, wow, she's really good.
Absolutely, yeah. It's hard to say, though, because I think I was still in the same boat in terms of just kind of waiting and seeing what would happen in 2012 when she went to what was literally her first national level championship meet, and then seeing her finished third in the 400-meter freestyle that second day of competition, one spot out of making the Olympic team, not knowing how she'd react to that kind of adversity as a 15-year-old, I didn't know what was going to happen. And then she finished just one spot out of making the final of the 200-meter freestyle a day after that. You know, top six make that for relays, so she just missed it by that much. Again, and then you kind of get down to the final couple of days of competition, and it's really kind of a gut check for her, I think, and nobody really knew how she was going to handle it.
How'd you do? You made the team.
I won the 800 at Olympic Trials.
Right. That's right.
it was pretty good. It was a pretty surreal experience getting to go to London and be on that Olympic team with, you know, people that I looked up to in the sport.
The accomplishment, I mean, you said before, you hardly told anybody that you wanted to make the Olympic team. Your coach made you say it out loud, and maybe you told your immediate family. When you made it, what did that say to you? What was your celebration like? What, you know, how did that work?
Well,
I mean,
you're
a kid. You're like,
yeah,
you're a
thrilled.
Kid now, you're a kid then.
I was thrilled, but, you know, I think I set that goal, but I didn't really, you know, fully believe that it was possible. And, you know, I kind of went into 2012 Olympic trials just knowing that I would give my best effort, and if I make the team, great, I achieve my goal, and if I don't, then I'm only 15 and I can, you know, still improve in the sport and get better. So I kind of had that no expectations, go in, race as hard as I can, and everything turned out well, and kind of, you know, survive in advance, made it to the Olympics, got through the preliminary race, was in the finals right next to the hometown favorite, and just again got up, had nothing to lose, and got my hands on the wall.
You
first.
Won a gold medal.
Yeah,
I mean, this is like, not everybody's able to do that. And not only did you make the team, you won a gold medal.
Yeah,
what I guess I don't get to ask this of that many people, when they're playing the anthem and it's going up and everybody's looking at you and you got the medal in your hand, what's that like?
It's an unbelievable feeling. I still get goosebumps when I'm up there at World Championships and Olympics. Every time, you don't hear the anthem the same way after you hear it for the first time like that.
All right, we'll take a break. Let's do a read. All right, we'll just do it seamlessly.
Yeah, sure.
Well, seamlessly after a fashion. This is Blue Apron. I like Blue Apron. We haven't had Blue Apron in a while.
You're a big fan.
I'm a fan of Blue Apron.
Yes.
It's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. And I know, because I've done this. Blue Apron has established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States, and as a result, the seafood is sourced sustainably. You know,
that's a tough one.
That's a tough one to read.
Yeah,
the seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. Beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals. Tell them that. Produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. Because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for recipe, they reduce food waste. Cooking together build strong family bonds. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. Those who spend a lot at restaurants or at high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal, which you can do at Chatter, too.
Yes, you can.
I mean, I'm not going to, like, take myself out of business here just to help
you. Very affordable.
Chatter is affordable.
Yes.
The upcoming meals, summer vegetable and egg paninis with Calabrian chili mayonnaise and caprese salad, soy-glazed pork and rice cakes with bok choy and marinated green beans. These are all good.
Sound lovely.
Skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits and garlic butter shrimp with corn and green bean salad and roasted purple tomatoes. So this is what you do. You just go to blueapron.com. Blue Apron knows you're busy, so now they're offering 30-minute meals. These meals are made with the same flavor and farm-fresh ingredients you know and love. They're ready in 30 minutes or less. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TonyK. That is blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, so now that's the beginning of your life. Then you become a champion. And I think everybody sort of wonders about these things. The expectations are wildly high on you. Are they fair?
Are you talking about after London?
Yeah.
I guess.
Oh, no,
I
mean, after Rio. I mean, in Rio. The expectations
are... Oh, after Rio?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really pay attention to the expectations too much. I know they're out there, and I know that I can still get better, and I know that I have hopefully more good swimming in the tank. So, you know, it's exciting for me. I love the sport, and I'm going to continue to hopefully stay at this level or get better.
You swim every distance, right? You swim short and long. I mean, long, there are people who are not on the same lap with you after a while. but if I said to you, you can only swim one thing, what would that race be?
It would probably be the 800 free, just because it was the first event I made for the Olympics and kind of the one that I'll always hold closely. But I really like the 400 free also, and the 200 and the mile. I mean,
I just love freestyle. Do women have as many events as men?
We now do. The 1500 was just added to the Olympic program.
And that's, I would assume, one of your better events.
It is, yeah.
So when you say you pay no attention to the expectations from others, what are the expectations you put on yourself?
Well, I set my own goals with my coaches, and those are the only ones that matter to me. And I'm always looking for those new ways to improve, and it gets harder and harder as you get older, and that's what keeps it fun and exciting and challenging for me.
So, yeah, I think you wonder about that. I mean, swimmers now, when I was young, swimmers were done by 20, 22, 24 at the latest. They were old. They were done. The most amazing thing, I guess, is Dara Torres, because she swam into her mid to late 40s, I think, and won medals, right? That, like when you were young, Mary Jane, that never happened. That was, and now people swim longer and longer. What is there more money? Is it money? I mean, why do they swim?
It might be money. It might be... new training techniques and kind of smarter training that can allow some of the sprinters to stay in it a little longer, or better dry land training, like strength and conditioning training that plays a part, better nutrition, better sleep, all these different things that are kind of gaining ground, gaining popularity, and I think people are taking advantage of those little things and realizing that they can continue to improve over a longer period of time, and
do you like it as much now as you liked it when you were 12?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that's, you know, the beauty of our sport is that we can swim. You can swim for as long as you want, and when I finish swimming competitively, I know I'm going to continue to swim just for good exercise. I think it's such a great sport. I think when I have kids, I'll for sure want them to be water safe, and maybe my mom will come to the pool and help them swim.
That's right.
She's the master teacher, I guess, and so we'll do some handstands and scissor kick and just enjoy being in the water.
So you've been to so many places and you've met so many people. Does any one or two or three or ten stand out where you would say, this was really fun, this was really cool, I got to meet X?
There have been a lot of great opportunities and things that have come since the Olympics. I think all the things I've gotten to do in the D.C. area have been some of my favorites. Just little things, and not even, you know, famous people. It's always fun to meet them and have those things. But I think the thing
You have that bright? Wasn't there a Bryce Harper moment?
Yeah.
Wasn't there that?
Yeah, there was that. But what I was going to say was, I think the thing that I love about having a gold medal to show to people is when I go to Children's Hospital or when I go to Walter Reed or somewhere and a kid holds the gold medal and their face just lights up. So just having that for the rest of my life to share with people is something that I enjoy so much, and I know I'll continue to.
You have lots of gold medals, though. What do you do with them? Do you ever take them? Yeah. Do you ever take them out and look at them? I mean,
I don't think I've looked at all of them altogether, but I'm sure sometime down the road I'll take them out and look at it.
Any places you've been to that you would say this was really different? This was really fun. I remember Rio. There was, and I think, a very legitimate feeling about the Zika virus scare. Which obviously did not seem to affect.
I didn't see one mosquito.
Right. So, but what I wonder about, I mean, that goes into your decisions to do things. Are there places you've been to where you go, this is so different than anything I ever expected before? Or because you're a swimmer, is it always just a chlorinated pool and that's all it is?
For the most part, we we go hotel pool, and you don't get to see too much of the city. But I feel so fortunate that I have gotten around the world through the sport. I'd only been out of the country once before London, and, you know, I've been to so many countries now, and I think I get little glimpses of the cities during the meet or after the meet, and we'll kind of keep tabs on which cities I want to get back to later in life and really enjoy. This past summer, I had a day off at the very end of the meet in Budapest at World Championships, so I got to go around Budapest a little bit with my family, and that's a beautiful city.
Can you eat what you want, or are you always training and you can't eat what you want? Can you indulge some sort of crazy eating habit?
You can indulge every once in a while, a little pizza, a little ice cream every once in a while, or at the end of a season, but during the season I'm pretty good about eating healthy, and something that I know I can continue to improve on and work on is eating healthy, feeling my body the right way to have that optimal performance.
So how long is the season?
Or is it just continuous? Basically year-round. Basically September to July or August.
You swim for your college team too, yeah. Right, for Stanford, and then you swim in the Worlds, and then you swim in the Olympics, so you're swimming all the time.
Yeah, so just taking this past year, for example, after Rio, I took 3 weeks off, I think almost exactly 3 weeks, and then went out to Stanford, moved in, started swimming right away. So, and then I was swimming the whole year until the World Championships, which went till July 31st. And then I'm taking my little break right now. So this is actually one of the longer breaks I've ever taken. It's just about a month off, and then I'll be back in the pool, I think September 6th or 7th. And actually, even now, I've gotten up to Palisades a little bit and have swum around and done some dry land training, but everything back serious early and September.
The next Olympics are where?
In Tokyo, 2020.
Oh, so you want to swim in those, obviously.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, working towards that and taking each year step by step to hopefully set myself up for that. There's always one big meet at the end of the summer, some World Championships or Pan Pacific Championships that are good indicators for each year leading up to the big year, which is the Olympics.
So I would be crazy not to bring this up. You lost a race in the World Championships.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody expected that or you expected it or however it worked, but you're so great that if that happens, it's almost as big a news as if you win a bunch.
The world's ending, right?
Yeah. Right. So how did you feel? What did you see? Was it, you know, how did it work?
Yeah, so it was in the middle of World Championships, and I had a big schedule at World Championships where I was swimming the 200, the 400, the 800, the 1500 free, and the 4x200 free relay, and the 4x1 relay, and it is a lot, and it's challenging, and I knew it was going to be challenging. I had a pretty similar schedule to it in 2015, and It went really well and everything. So I knew I could handle it, and I did handle it. I mean, I swam some really good times, and I did win 5 events and get 1 silver. So it's really nothing to be disappointed about. And I dove into the 200 freestyle final, and I just didn't feel quite like myself. I don't know what it was. It was probably the fatigue from the day before, where I had the 1500 free final and the 200 free semifinal, and just was a little off my game that day. But I still am happy that I pulled it through and got to the wall for a silver medal. And I think the really exciting thing for me now is I kind of have a little bit of a spark from that and can use it as motivation.
I would imagine there is a certain revenge motivation that you'd like to beat that particular person.
No, you know, it's not like, I mean, I want to make the 200 free one of my best events. And I think regardless of the outcome of that race, I would have said that. So I'm more of a distance swimmer. But the past couple of years, I've gotten down to the shorter races, and those are challenging races. They're shorter, you know, the tenths of a second, hundredths of a second that separate first, second, third. And I want to get to the point where I'm really out there in the 200 free and posting some great times there.
Yeah, so let me ask a sort of strategic question. In the shorter races, you can see your competition. I don't know if you look, but you can. I mean, you can feel your competition around you.
Yep.
How are you, like, if you're so far ahead in the longer races, if you've literally lapped the field in the longer races, how do you stay on the pace to break a record, to win? What it is, where does that come from? I can understand in something short, you know, you get to see everybody else, yeah. But in something long, how does that work?
I think I've just always had a pretty good internal motivating voice in my head, I guess I would say. And that just comes from practice and in training and always pushing myself, you know, one step beyond what I want to go to. And when I get into those races, in those distance races where I'm out there, I am always racing the clock and I'm always pushing myself to go a good time. And just kind of focusing on my race plan in the middle of those races. And
are you talking to yourself? Are you singing to yourself? Are you? I count. I do is count steps. What are you doing?
I count the laps for the most part, but I don't have a song in my head usually. I'm kind of just like motivating myself. You know, like, come on, Katie, come on.
Oh, you do that?
I kind of say. I mean, it sounds silly, but
no.
Just kind of thinking through my stroke and how I'm feeling. And you know, you try not to get too caught up in feelings of, oh, I'm not feeling that great, or, oh, I feel great, this must be a great time, and then touching the wall and realizing, oh, it was okay. So just kind of staying on point with what I'm trying to do, keeping a good rhythm, not falling off in the middle or the end of a race, and kind of accelerating to the finish.
I would sing to myself. I'd sing Beatles songs.
Yeah.
Well, I feel bad because I want to introduce a song into Katie's head, and she sings like Meow Mix. Meow, 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 meow. So if you're thinking that your next tournament, you can punch me in the face. Okay?
It's okay. I have some technical stupid questions I want to ask. We talked about this the other night.
Yes.
Well, one technical question is not stupid, which is, if you're going to swim a lot of events, and I imagine this happened to Michael Phelps, and I imagine this happened to a lot of people, even sprinters in track, the schedule is very important. I mean, you like the Olympic people, they can put a schedule out that can help you or hurt you, right?
Right.
I mean, at the Worlds, did you feel the schedule was an oppressive schedule or not?
I kind of just take the schedule and do what I can with it. You know, it's nothing you can control. And the schedule from Worlds this year was the same as 2 years ago. And so the hardest part for me in that schedule is the 1500 free final is, it was, I think it was about 30 or 40 minutes before the 200 free semifinal at this meet. But I had to go to a medal ceremony right before the 200 free semifinal. So it cuts down on your warm down time and everything like that. So you just do the best with what you have in front of you. And the great thing is, you know, I have coaches and managers on the USA staff, and They were always helping me get to where I need to go and helping me make sure that I get the proper warm down and nutrition and everything before each race. And
fabulous. You have a team of people just taking you. It's like being a rock star.
Well, I mean, it's nice. I mean, it's nice that USA Swimming is so big and so fast that we have, 50 swimmers at these meets. So there are a lot of coaches. I have a great coach, Greg Meehan, who's, who I knew prepared me really well for that schedule. And I just knew that I could do it. And I had a great double that day. And I think that week is a really challenging week. And it's something that I know now that, I'm swimming all these events and hopefully I can continue to qualify for those events at international meets. I know it's something to manage moving forward and continue to improve on.
Can a pool be made faster? Are all pools the same or are some pools different?
Well, all pools are the same length, and that's something that everyone, likes to remind themselves when they get to big meets that, there are more lights, there are more cameras. It's really a really pretty pool, but it's the same length as any other pool. I think some pools are faster than others, just the temperature and the depth. I think colder pools are faster. There's probably, scientific things out there on that. I mean, most of the international pools are that we compete at are pretty similar.
And what lane do you like to be in? Does the lane make a difference?
Well, the top seeded person is in lane 4, and then, it goes until the outside lane. So I think ideally it's best to be in the middle lane so you can see your competitors on both sides. But sometimes it's advantageous to be on an outside lane, and then you get to see everybody on the way, coming back if you only breathe to one side or something.
I mean, I just assumed... It just
depends.
I assumed that because the top seed was in the middle, that was... Somehow that was the great benefit lane, or else, because they don't seed them lane 1 is the best all the way down to 8. So I assume swimmers must feel that is the better place to be.
I guess so, yeah. As I said, I think just being able to see both sides more easily.
You can't choose what lane you're in.
If
you're the top seed, you have to be
you
in
have
lane
to be
four,
there.
Yeah,
right?
You can't say, I want to be in lane 1.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's all done by your qualifying times.
Yeah.
When was the last time you were in either 1 or 8?
I was probably in it at some point.
In a different
event. Yeah. This year I got 6th or 7th and or 6th in the 100 free at World Championship Trial. So in some of my off events, I'll certainly be in the outside lane in a top heat. Or something like that.
Okay, so there are people out there now who all they want to do is beat you. They have your pictures up on their wall, and they are swimmers in the same way that you might have had someone else's picture up there and say, if I could only do this, I'd feel great. How do you feel about that? How do you feel that you're, that would be the greatest accomplishment in some swimmer's life to beat you?
It's actually kind of a good feeling, because as you said, I had that all growing up and...
For who? Who was the one you wanted to be?
Well, I mean, I had so many people just in this area, like Katie Hoff and Kate Ziegler, who were great distance swimmers in this area and just always jumped at an opportunity to go to a meet and watch them swim. And so, I look to them as people that I would... aspire to get to their times. So I think, it's an honor to be in the position that I'm in, and it's something that I'll never take for granted that some little...
But you don't want them to do that.
I mean, when I get up and race them, I'm going to want to beat them.
That's right.
But, if somebody that comes in and beats me in, a few years or in a year, whenever it is, if someone comes up to me and says, Katie, I wouldn't be in this position if it wasn't for you and for trying to get to the point that you were at. That's a humbling and great feeling. And I think, I was a 15-year-old on a team with some of my heroes, and I think, if hopefully I'll make an Olympic team in 4 years, who knows what'll happen beyond that. But I really hope that young girls are looking up to me, and I hope that I can continue to be a role model in that respect in the pool and hopefully out of the pool as well.
Last question. Can we name food for you here? Is there any particular food that we could name for you here?
There might be an NCAA rule.
That we can't name the food?
I don't know. Well, we'd have to check on that. But, I don't know. Some pizza, some...
I think probably allowed.
With the Ledecky quinoa or something like that?
Yeah.
It wasn't so bad.
That would be an honor, Tony.
This was fun.
This was a lot of fun.
That's it. Thanks. You're out. You passed the audition. Before we get out of here, I want to say thanks to Katie Ledecky and her whole family, to David, to Michael, to Mary Jen, for coming on this pop-up show today. I'd like to thank the sponsors, Casper Mattresses and Blue Apron. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.